Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
We have a couple of football history short stories in this double feature of Gridiron Lore on today's podcast. The connection of a popular food item to a football game and how the Yale team motivated one of their top players of all time. These two stories coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we're going to have an interesting bit of stories for you today. A double feature, mind you. But before we get to the double feature, the two different stories related to football history, I just wanted to mention to you that we have a newsletter that comes out each and every day of the year telling you about what's coming up on that day on PigskinDispatch.com. The Pigskin Daily History Dispatch Podcast, the Sports Jersey Dispatch Podcast, Orville Mulligan, sports writer, the Sports History Network, and Jersey Dispatch. You know, we're going to cover you and tell you every single thing that's coming out on those days. We're adding more items all the time, and you can make sure you stay ahead of sports history, knowing what's out there for the day for the people in my circle and things in the pig pen. So we hope you do that. You can sign up for it by using the show note link on this episode of the podcast, or you can go to either jerseydispatch.com or pigskindispatch.com and join our email list there. And that way, every day at 6:30 a.m., you'll be sure to get that great newsletter from the pig pen. So again, you can use your show notes. That's probably the easiest thing for you to listen to this podcast, or pigskindispatch.com. Now let's get to our story. Now, most of us have either eaten, purchased, or seen hot dogs being sold at a football game at one point in our lives, or possibly and probably many, many more. I know the old Chevy commercials would like to make us believe that baseball is a sport associated with apple pie and hot dogs. The marketing department at General Motors Division may be a little bit surprised what sports connection really is with the hot dog originally, or so they say. We'll get to that in a moment. In fact, you know, how did they come up with the name hot dog? It's a very odd name. Now, to my knowledge, it's not made by any canine meat. At least, God, I hope it's not. That'd be a kind of a disturbing fact. And I don't really think it is. I trust what they're putting in, so to speak, for our food. But I don't think it's dog meat. And, you know, it's definitely hot. That part I understand, the adjective part. But, you know, another question is, who exactly did name this the hot dog? And I guess maybe why did they do that? Maybe that answers our first question. Well, the question is not who invented delicious sausage links, but who named them hot dogs? The Frankfurter, of course, was named for the city in Germany where they first were served, Frankfurt, Germany. You know, other German locales, they called them Deutschland sausages, as they look like the common elongated pups that were popularized in German society. You know, around here we call them the wiener dogs, you know, the Deutschlands. The term wiener is a shortened term for wienerwurst, and this was some Dutch areas that formerly called the sausage when they were brought across a pond by German Americans. The term is for Vienna sausage, or wienerwurst, which was actually shortened to wiener, but in American and English we say wiener. So that's how that became called the wiener. So, but still, the question, how was this named a hot dog? No one's exactly for sure, for sure who named the wiener or frankfurter a hot dog exactly. But one story should be interesting to us in football history. It says that a popular New York Journal cartoonist, Tad Dorgan, attended a gridiron contest at the Polo Grounds in New York City one fall afternoon. While he was there, he observed a food vendor named Harry Stevens selling the hot Dachshund sausages during a game in New York Stadium and shouting, "Get your red hot Dachshund sausages!" When Dorgan later tried to create the story in a newspaper, he found, like most of us, that he had no idea how to spell the word Dachshund. So, knowing the loosely connected English translation, he expressed it in print as, "Get your red hot dogs." Replace Dachshund with dogs. Now, some experts say that this was an urban legend as to the print of Dorgan's story or cartoon. It never surfaced or has been located. Other leads say that the Dachshund naturally and publicly was transcribed by Americans into the word hot dog from Dachshund. But for sure, the purpose of this story on a football history website and podcast, the first one is a lot more fun and interesting, that it was named by at a football game. So there you go. Believe it or not, we're not sure. The folks over at hotdog.org website say that is not the case. They have a different theory on it, but it is definitely one of the theories and one of the tales that have been told for a long time. But even if it's an urban legend, it's still kind of interesting. We told you it's a doubleheader. We're going to come back with our next story on football history right after this message.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that. Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network. Soundtrack provided by Alexander Nakarada from filmmusic.io.
Yeah, we certainly do thank Ross Bliley of the Pigskin Tales podcast for helping us out with that message about the Sports Jersey Dispatch podcast. Definitely, Ross has got a great program, and we hope you listen to that one, as well as all of our great podcasts here on the Sports History Network. Now, we talked about this a few days ago. We talked about Pudge Heffelfinger. And in the recent episode on the Pro Football in Western Pennsylvania that we aired last Saturday, we talked a bit about the old Pudge Heffelfinger being the first professional paid football player. And we mentioned that when he reached college age, before his pro days, he was a pretty good-sized man already for that time. The footballfoundation.org website bio describes Heffelfinger as being 6 foot 3 inches tall and weighing in about 195 pounds during his college age years. And originally, Heff had planned to further his education at the University of Minnesota. After all, that's where he was from, and he did have some training in prep school from Minnesota and played a little bit of ball for them. But May of his senior year in high school, a local Yale alumnus recognized his athletic talent and convinced him to play for Yale instead. The Eli graduate tutored Pudge to the point where he could pass the challenging Yale entrance exam. And on Heffelfinger's first day of freshman practice in 1888, the captain of the varsity team, Pa Corbin, spotted the menacing frosh on the field and gave him a position on the varsity line. He was raw, and his Midwestern upbringing on the gridiron did not have the mean demeanor that was going to allow him to thrive in the East bludgeoning style of play. So I came across a piece to further that story in the 1939 Yale Army game program that Pa Corbin, the guy that assigned him to the varsity line, said about the training, and I'm saying that in quotations, my air quotes, that he and the Yale staff gave to Heff, just to mean him up a little bit. Corbin said that the freshman Heffelfinger was a gentle, demure, and somewhat mild-mannered fella. You know, Heff's posture lacked self-confidence, as his head was often drooped and his shoulders sagging and eyes were always looking down, never looking another guy in the face. Corbin assigned a graduate assistant, Howard Knapp, a prominent lawyer in New Haven, to, and I quote, do everything possible to arouse Heff so that he would give all he had for the Yale team, unquote. The lawyer had tried everything he could to rile up old Heff, but nothing seemed to work. Seeing that he was almost empty of his tactics in his sack, he tried to one last-ditch effort of motivation. He would show Pudge Heffelfinger the sight of blood. Now, Knapp was a lawyer, so he was a clever fellow, and he knew how to be a little bit dramatic, I guess, too. So he went to the local slaughterhouse, gathered up some animal blood in its liquid form, and then he filled an ink pen with it and secretly wrote Heff a letter using the, what I quote, from Pa Corbin, the sharpest, strongest kind of a letter, using every reasonable form of expression, unquote, to wake the young athlete from his lethargic attitude of team spirit and combativeness. And was the letter ever effective? Well, it most certainly was. Heffelfinger, thinking that the blood to be human and gained in some ill-gotten way, was scared straight into the kind of ball player that the Eli team needed. He played his best game that season, shortly thereafter against Princeton, aiding Yale in a great victory over their rival. And that really carried on through the next couple years. Almost to the day of that game in Princeton, Heffelfinger could be seen crushing the V formation almost single-handedly by throwing himself into it so his teammates could go in and make tackles from the ball carriers protected by that flying wedge. And he was definitely a formidable foe, and that's why so many people wanted him to play at the professional level, including the Allegheny Athletic Association, who ended up paying him $500 for his services, and a few more teams after that hiring the great Pudge Heffelfinger to play some football for them. So we hope that this shed a little bit more light into some great football history on one of the great players of the early stocking cap era in William Pudge Heffelfinger, and how he was motivated by his Yale teammates to become the fierce, formidable football foe that he really was against his rivals. So we hope you enjoyed it. Hope you'll join us tomorrow for some more great football history. And until then, have a great Gridiron Day. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.